Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, and welcome to Blizzard Watch, the podcast where we watch Blizzard and its many games. And I'm your host, Matt Rossi, and with me this week is my fantastic co-host, Ann Stickney. Ann, usually I ask what you've been up to, but I feel like maybe narrowing the focus might be good here. What have you been doing in-game?
In-game? Not a lot, actually. I'm like on the Eternal Dagger hunt. Like, that's legit the only thing that I'm after right now is daggers. Because everything else that I have is either 355 on up as far as item level goes. Most of my stuff is 370. But I still have a few pieces that are like 355, 360. And then my daggers are still down at like 330. Because I cannot find anything better. And LFR is not being my friend. Nothing is being my friend right now. So I'm like, okay, well, that's just how this is going to work. It feels bad when you're a damage dealing class and everything that you do is kind of based off of how powerful your weapons are, yet you can't for the life of you get a decent set of weapons. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, I got lucky in that I've actually got pretty solid weapons on my main.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's...
But you play a warrior. Are you doing warrior or Death Knight right now?
The warrior is my main. Death Knight is kind of my tank. When I feel like tanking stuff, I go in on the Death Knight. The Death Knight has, like, a 350 weapon. The warrior has a 380 main hand and a 370 offhand.
See, and the thing is, it's like...
time to get those.
Yeah, but the thing is like... You play what spec are you?
The warrior is either Fury or Arms, depending on how I feel. I switch between the two.
How many different weapon types can you use?
Well, I mean, they all have to be two-handed. But
right.
Yeah, I can use a two-handed mace, sword, polearm, or a staff. For a while, I was actually using a staff as my main weapon because it was a 340 staff.
Really?
That was my main weapon. Oh, yeah, for a long time. I had a strength staff with 300, 340. That was what I used all the way through Aldir until finally we started doing Heroic Aldir and I got upgrades. That's the only way I got upgrades was we started running Heroic Aldir. Before that, nothing. I couldn't get a weapon drop out of Aldir to save my life, so I used the 340 staff from quests forever. It was one of the ones that dropped from Emissary, actually, as I recall.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Okay. So, see, you have, like, options here, though.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Like... I don't have to wait for a dagger and nothing. You know,
it has to be a dagger. Not only, it just has to be a dagger. That's all. It has to be a dagger.
Yeah, and it's really weird because they made it so rogues could use axes and fist weapons and all that. And then they made daggers necessary for various rogue abilities.
Well, it's here's
like,
the thing.
Why did you broaden open what they could equip if you can't use them?
If you are outlaw, you can use several different weapon types. If you are assassination, it's just daggers. And I believe subtlety is the same way, although I couldn't tell you for sure because I haven't played subtlety in a while. But I believe it's the same thing with subtlety where daggers, that's it. You can just use daggers.
But that's because they made the strikes use the daggers, right?
Yeah, if I want to use mutilate,
how hard is that to fix?
If I want to use mutilate, I have to have daggers equipped, and mutilate is like that's like one of the big abilities. If I use envenom, I have to have daggers. Like that's just it's how the class works in that particular spec. And I keep hearing the same story over and over again about how, oh well, you know, assassination, it's a class fantasy thing, and da 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 da. And of course you're going to use daggers, and da 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 da. I'm like, would you just like an option? Just give me one other option. That's all I need. Like one other option. You know, all those fist weapons you keep throwing at me that I can't use because they're actually for outlaw and they're not for me. Let me use those as assassination. I could see an assassin using a fist weapon. Why not? There's nothing.
Yeah.
I just
club them
in
the back of the head or use a clawed one.
Yeah, just use the claws to, like, you know, stab them or whatever. It's fine. It works. It's okay.
The assassin in Diablo, the Diablo 2 assassin,
yeah,
uses clawed fist weapons.
Yeah, I know. This is part of the reason why I'm like leaning heavier on fist weapons than anything else. Because, I mean, okay, I get it with the swords, because some of the swords in World of Warcraft are gigantic. And you can't exactly, when you think about it, logically speaking, you can't exactly be stealthy when you're carting a sword around. Okay, I get it. Unless it straps over your back, because, you know, katanas and things like that. But anyway, regardless, okay, I get it. I get it. I do get it, logistically speaking. I'm just saying, from a gameplay standpoint, it feels terrible to be this far into a brand new expansion and still have these puny little toothpicks instead of something that's actually a viable weapon. So do something about it, please and thank you. Okay.
But yeah, we should probably, it's been a while, so we should probably start talking about all the things we haven't been talking about for the past couple of weeks, because I don't know if you guys heard, there was this big convention at the beginning of the month.
Well, we got the Lore Watch portion of BlizzCon coverage out of the way, and then things went kind of hairy before we could get to the Blizzard Watch podcast portion. Sorry, guys.
There's a lot of stuff lined up. But yeah, we should probably talk about all of it as much as we can. I want to talk about something that's unalloyed positive so far, at least most of the stuff I've seen. They put in Ashe, a new hero for Overwatch. If you didn't get a chance to see that, Ashe is live now. You can play her. If you didn't know, Ashe is voiced by Jennifer Hale, who is one of the best voice actors in the world. One of my favorites. I'm sure she's one of Anne's favorites too.
Hello. Yeah. I love her.
Yeah, she's done a million things. You have heard her. If you've heard Commander Shepard even once, you've heard Jennifer Hale, because she did the voice of Commander Shepard. But yeah, Ashe is a weapon-based character, very much so, much more so than almost any other Overwatch hero. I'm trying to think of anybody who's as gun-based as she is. Maybe Widowmaker, you could argue.
Widowmaker, yeah, I think Widowmaker. I don't know if I would consider Hanzo. Like, a lot of the damage-dealing characters, they're based more heavily on their weapons and stuff, but they pointed out at BlizzCon that a lot of the heroes that they've been coming out with recently were focused on, like, particular skill sets, or, you know, doing support, or doing kind of tanky type stuff, where, like with Brigitte, where she could, like, do protection shields and things like that, on top of slapping the heck out of everybody with her mace, which I think is fantastic on every level. She just got nerfed, I think, or she's about to. I believe I read something about that in passing. So yeah, Ashe is one of those characters where they were like, let's go ahead and take the focus back to, this is a damage dealer with a very particular set of skills, and let's focus on that particular set of skills and that weapon that she's carrying around, because that weapon is amazing. Also, Bob. I love Bob so much.
Yeah, let's talk about Bob for a moment, because that's different.
Ultimate is amazing.
Yeah, Ashe's ultimate is another person. Like, I don't think, I'm pretty sure no other Overwatch hero's ultimate is somebody else shows up. Her Bob is a robot butler, for lack of a better word. He was her butler.
Okay, so Ashe was raised in a very wealthy family. Her parents were highly sought out executives that were kind of off on business all the time. And she was essentially raised by Bob, who was her robot butler. And then when she took off and decided to go into the whole life of crime thing, of course Bob came with her. So he's kind of like a protector, but he's also kitted out with some pretty impressive amounts of firepower all on his own. And he punches. And yeah, it's kind of cool. We haven't... The closest we've had to anything like that is Hanzo, his dragons. But his dragons don't actively do anything. His dragons are just kind of like, they're dragons that come out. They go in a straight line. They don't chase anybody. They don't, it's just a straight line path, right? Bob is more like an AI that is working in conjunction with your character. And it's kind of interesting that they went this route with it too, because one of the things that I kind of speculated when Brigitte was still kind of on the table was that, do you remember the blueprints that they showed?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah, I do.
So on the blueprints, they had like the jetpack cat, and everybody was freaking out because they thought, oh my gosh, is jetpack cat going to be a thing? I thought maybe they would bring out Brigitte and her ultimate would be jetpack cat. Like he would come out and do things for her and that kind of thing. And that would be kind of cool. That did not come to pass. It didn't make Brigitte any less cool, though, because she's still really cool. She's still really fun to play. Talk to me after I actually get a chance to look at those nerves, and I'll tell you if I still have that same opinion. But I like that they decided to try this out with another character, even if it wasn't Brigitte. Also, I just love Ash. I think she's a really cool character. I think it's cool that McCree has a foil, and I think that it's kind of cool that we got a little bit more of a glimpse into McCree's backstory. It wasn't enough to, like, you know, answer any major questions. Mostly it raised a lot of questions, particularly that whole bit at the end with the robot in the egg.
Yeah, I believe her name is
Echo. Is that her name? Echo. That's what Kaplan called her anyway, was Echo. So it's like, okay, so we're sitting here, we're watching these guys do this gunfight and everything, and it's really cool, and Ash is really cool, and then we have this Omnic pulling a Gaga in, like, an egg on the payload, and McCree has the little chip thing to make her come to life, and then he just leaves her there and says, go find Overwatch. Just go find Overwatch, because they said they wanted me, but they really need you, so you go do your thing. And that's it. And it left it right there. And I'm like, wait, what? What just happened?
Well, I also thought it was interesting that the short heavily implies that McCree set the whole thing up with the, oh, bloody heck, I can't remember the name of the gang. What's the name of the gang?
The Deadlock Gang.
Yeah, he's the one that tipped the Deadlock Gang off about the train in the first place.
Yeah.
So they'd attack it and, you know, he'd be able to get to the container, which implies that he couldn't get to it on his own or didn't want to be seen doing so. There's something going on there.
Well, the cool part to me that I find mystifying, and I'm assuming that we're going to get this cleared up over the course of the next year or so. I'm pretty sure. Now, Kaplan did say very specifically that Echo will not be hero number 30 for Overwatch. They are interested in somehow incorporating her into the game as a hero at some point in the future. They're kind of hopeful that they can do that at some point, but she's not going to be hero number 30, which tells me they already have hero number 30 deep in development and they're working with it and they know what it is, whatever it happens to be. I guess we'll find that out in a few months, probably beginning of next year. That seems to be like a good time for them to announce more new stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, I would assume that, yeah. I mean, with Ash coming out, apparently Ash was a sudden thing, whereas they were making the video and they were all like super excited by her design and decided they wanted to make her playable.
Which was great.
That's cool.
But the interesting part about it, though, is that Echo has the Vishkar emblem on her forehead from the Vishkar Corporation, the one that Symmetra works with.
Yeah.
One that works with all the hard light technology and all of that. The one that's probably a bad guy, but we haven't really gotten to explore that too much beyond, hey, they were trying to deal with Lumerico, and there was some really shady stuff going down with all of that. Oh, and by the way, they were responsible for all the stuff that went down in Rio de Janeiro. And yeah, so it's like, was this Omnic part of Overwatch at all? That's the question that I have right now, is was Echo ever actually part of Overwatch? Or was she somebody that McCree encountered after he left? Or did he help her escape?
Well, whatever, you're the one that pointed this out, that whenever they last saw each other, he still had both his hands.
Yeah, yeah, he still had both his arms, because she said, what happened? And if you look at the earlier stuff, the stuff from Retribution, the flashback stuff, and any of the flashback material, really, McCree still has both his arms. So he lost his arm at some point, and I'm beginning to wonder if he was even in Overwatch when that occurred, because he left before everything went terrible, if I remember correctly, in his all of his character backstory and all that other stuff. It said that he was getting really tired of all of the back and forth and the bickering that was going on, so he decided to just take his leave. And it was kind of implied that he did that before all the stuff went down at the Swiss headquarters, where, you know, presumably Morrison and Reyes died, quote unquote, air quoting. Anyway, we're going on way too much about this stuff, and it's probably stuff that we could talk about in Lore Watch. But regardless, I don't know. It's all kind of fascinating. I'm really interested in seeing what happens from here, because this is the first step they've taken forward in the story in a while. And this is a legitimate step forward. It's a very small step forward from Recall, but it's still a step forward. And I'm hoping that we get more story this year. I say that every year, but I'm really hoping we get more story this year.
Speaking of stories being moved forward, Ben, let's talk about Ophelia from Heroes of the Storm. Because for me, this was the biggest surprise, even though a lot of people were talking about Ophelia coming in as a playable hero. They did this. This is the first time that the lore that they've been establishing for Heroes of the Storm actually matters for something. This is the first time it means something. Before, up till now, it's just been kind of like background stuff that, you know, okay, this is happening and we're going to have a new map. Like the Alterac, was it called Alterac Valley? It wasn't called Alterac Valley. Alterac Pass. The Alterac Pass map is involved with the Raven Lord and, oh, the Dark Nexus, that those Dark Nexus skins are involved, and, oh, we're doing this thing with the Lady of Thorns. But now, with Ophelia coming in as a playable character, it kind of takes all that lore they've been establishing for Heroes of the Storm and actually makes it something. Like, now it actually matters to this character. This character is a part of it. It's her backstory. So I thought that was pretty interesting. What did you think? What did you think when you saw Ophelia?
I was expecting, ever since they introduced Ophelia in like that first comic when she showed up, I'm like, that's probably going to be the new hero, because she's got way too interesting a design for her not to be. And I didn't know what she would do or what capacity, but I figured at some point, if they're going to make anyone a playable hero, it's either going to A, be the Raven Lord, but I don't think they're going to do that because he's the big bad guy. Or B, this little girl character who seems fairly unassuming but has an incredible amount of power, which sounds like the sort of thing that would be super fun on a Heroes of the Storm map, right? I loved her trailer, like her trailer introduction. I thought that whole cinematic was really pretty. I kind of understood what was going on because, again, I've been following the comics and everything. I don't know. I think it's neat that they're finally making an original character for Heroes of the Storm. But keep in mind that my main investment with most of Blizzard's titles revolves around the story components behind everything. That's just what hooks me, right? So I can't really speak to gameplay of Heroes of the Storm because I don't play it, really. It's not my genre. I'm not terribly good at it, and I don't want to, you know, go in there and play a game with a bunch of other people when I'm really not very good at this. Like, I'm really not very good at Heroes of the Storm, you guys. So when they said that they were going to start introducing a story element to Heroes of the Storm, I was really kind of excited because it was something that wasn't there initially in the game. And that's what seems to be the problem with me, is that because it wasn't present from day one, it's really hard for me to get invested in the story. The cinematic helped, I think, and kind of brought everything back into perspective. I believe they have another comic coming out shortly, if they haven't had one come out already, that should help push that along a little further. This is that team's first foray into storytelling. It's not a medium that they were working with that title before. So the story isn't quite hooking me as much as, oh, I don't know, World of Warcraft, which they've been writing for how many years now? Way too many. I mean,
yeah, if we talk about Warcraft as a story thing, it's been since the 90s.
Right.
So,
I'm kind of, I'm interested in seeing where this goes from here. And I like Ophelia. Like, I like her character design. I like what she can do. I really liked that cinematic. It actually had me rooting for her, which wasn't really something that had been going on as of yet. And I'm interested in seeing where they go further with it. And have you seen her abilities and stuff, like, on the battlefield?
I don't play
the game that much, but I do like watching the streams and the comps and, you know, the competitions and things like that. I can't wait to see her in, like, tournament gameplay and that kind of thing, because I think it would be really entertaining.
The thing she does where she attacks and then that resets her cooldowns, I feel like it's going to lead to a pretty active style. Like, when I remember when I was watching people play her.
Yeah,
it seems to be like if you don't play her very actively, you're not getting the most out of her. But I think I said to somebody, it was kind of like she felt like Raven from the Teen Titans, you know, just all the shadow stuff she's throwing around and the weird monsters she's summoning.
A little bit.
Or the darkness, Jackie from the darkness, kind of like conjuring up the glomp that bites people and so forth. So it's an interesting mix of stuff that she's got going on. But at this point, I think I'm going to throw it around to the next thing. This one's real polarizing, guys. So, yeah, we're just going to talk about it because, you know, I want to talk about it. Diablo Immortal got announced, the mobile device MMO. That's what it is, guys. It's straight up. It's an MMO. It's a Diablo MMO that's just for tablets and phones. And people are, you know, some people really don't like it. Some people, like, think it's a betrayal. Some people think it's, you know, great. Most of the people I've talked to who got to play the demo at BlizzCon seem to like it a lot. But, you know, there are people who are diehard non-mobile players who don't like it. And I'll be up front. I don't play a lot of mobile games. Like, I don't. Like, I managed to escape. When Animal Crossing and Pokemon got on mobile devices, I somehow avoided them. And that ain't easy. Because everybody was playing Pokemon Go for a while.
And
literally everyone.
I'm still playing Pokemon Go, actually. Yeah. It's one of two games that are still on my phone.
my wife right now, my wife's gaming is Pokemon Go, Stardew Valley, and I think WoW. And two of those are on phones.
I have avoided putting Stardew Valley on my phone because then I will never put my phone down again.
That's pretty much what happens.
It's a very good game.
The phone gives you a weekly how much you've used X program thing.
Mm-hmm.
When I did that to my wife, she was like, "Oh God, I don't even want to look at this." And she looked at it and was like, "Yeah, Stardew Valley."
Yeah.
And apparently, like, there's some quirks to it. Like, for instance, Stardew Valley fishing is terrible on the mobile device. It's actually really, really hard.
Well, it's not much better on the PC, to be perfectly honest. Although I have not picked up Stardew Valley in a while. And I deliberately have not picked up Stardew Valley in a while because it sucks you in and you think that you're not playing that much. And then you look up and it's like, where did the last 3 hours go? Oh, whoops. Yeah.
So, I mean, for me, mobile games are not like something I'm really interested in, but it doesn't matter to me if I even play Diablo Immortal even once, because what they're going to be covering in the game, I'm the big Diablo lore nerd around here. I'm the guy who loves Diablo lore. I love looking it up. I love talking about it, thinking about it, thinking about where it might go. And
to be fair, I do love Diablo lore. I'm just not as knowledgeable about it as you are. Like, you're kind of like expert level, and I'm kind of, you know, in that in between where I can talk about it. But yeah, the in-depth stuff, that's your.
And for me, the idea that they're going to start 5 years after Diablo 2 and explain all this stuff that we didn't have explanations for and show us all this stuff that we didn't get to see, that's really cool to me. Like, and the thing is like at BlizzCon, they're dropping names that were pretty deep lore cuts. Like, for instance, one of the characters, Jacob Stalek, is the guy who back then, and this isn't a comic. They put this comic out when Diablo 3 came out.
Yeah.
That Jacob and his friend, the mage, whose name is escaping me at the moment, but I put it in Know Your Lore. The two of them found Tyriel's sword, Eldruin, and were carrying it around. The guy was the Avatar of Justice while Tyriel was without a body. when Tyrael blew himself apart and he wasn't there. The sword was there, and this guy was wandering around committing acts of justice with it. And that's a character they're going to have in the game. That's like a huge, that's a deep cut, guys. I mean, for me, that's the importance of Diablo Immortal. It's getting to see all this stuff that we just kind of had like a, oh yeah, that happened 20 years ago. Like, you know, they rebuilt, they built a new Tristram. Have you ever wondered why they did that? Like, why would they build a new Tristram? The old Tristram did not end well. Why did we build a new one? Well, it turns out they built a new one to exploit the old one. The whole reason that Tristram exists was to go to old Tristram and loot it, and to go to the cathedral and loot it. And people have been looting that cathedral for a decade. Like, it took them like something like 10 years to use it all up, to get everything they could get out of the top levels. And nobody wanted to go deeper because they get killed.
There's still stuff in there. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all this stuff is, to me, it's fascinating. I'm really into this, but I don't know. You should talk about what you think when you're looking at it.
Okay. To me, I couldn't quite understand why people were upset. I get it now because it's been a couple of weeks and I've had a chance to look over all of everybody's hot takes on the situation. And I get it. People wanted Diablo 4. They wanted a Diablo game for PC. And I'm right there with you guys because I wanted that too. And I still want that. It's in development. It's something that they're working on. They're just not ready to announce it yet. We were hoping that they would announce it at BlizzCon, even if it was just like a title screen or something, or a logo. I don't know. Something like that. But we didn't get it. Excuse me. I had a cough. Anyway, that's disappointing. That's really disappointing. And what's doubly disappointing is if you're a hardcore PC gamer and you don't really pay attention to mobile games at all, and Diablo says, ooh, we've got something big to announce, and it's a new game, but it's on a system that you don't play. It's on a thing that you don't play, and it's something you just don't have. It's not what you wanted. And I get it. I totally get it. At the same time, as somebody who does play mobile titles every now and again, I'm really excited about this. Like, I'm okay with sitting down on my iPad or my phone and playing some Diablo and smushing some demons. I don't play Diablo on any kind of, like, super invested level or anything like that. What I do when I play Diablo is I have been having a really bad day. I feel like smashing some demon faces in. Cool, there's a game out there for that. Yeah. And it makes me feel better, right? That's kind of where I'm at when I play Diablo. I'm not like super invested in it. I don't play like hardcore mode or anything like that. I just log on every now and again, smash some things, loot some things, call it a day, because that's just what Diablo is, and that's what makes it fun to me, just to me. Yeah. And I am going to like preface that all of this is, it's just strictly my opinion on the thing, right?
I don't have a problem. But that's what we do here anyway.
Right. I don't have a problem with a Diablo mobile title. I think it looks pretty cool. I think that, like, the gameplay footage and everything that we saw come out of BlizzCon, it looks great for a mobile title. The controls on it look fantastic, which, of course, they do, because they're working a lot. I find it interesting that a lot of people were like, it's just a clone from one of NetEase's other games. No, it's not, you guys. It's like its own thing with its own storyline. Yes, the controls look almost identical to those other NetEase games. Well, why would you change those controls if they're functional and they're working? You know what I mean? Maybe that's part of the reason why they brought in NetEase in the first place, was to go, okay, so we need to come up with some kind of UI interface that'll work on a mobile device for an RPG title. Do you guys have anything like that? And NetEase said, yeah, actually, we've got a few things in development. Let's talk about it. And came up with this screen thing that actually, it looks really like kind of fluid. It might take me a little bit to get the hang of it, but it looks really fluid. You use your thumbs and, you know, kind of move around the screen. You can point the little targeting reticle at whatever you want. You can fire off however many abilities you happen to have. You can choose between them, that kind of thing. It looks good. It looks good. However, yeah. I'm going to add a caveat to this. They have not said anything about how this game is going to be priced. They have not said anything about whether or not this game is going to have microtransactions, or if it's going to be like a pay-to-play thing or how the monetization is really going to work out for this title. And when asked about it, they said, well, we haven't really gotten into that yet. We're still working on gameplay design and making sure that it feels as good as it possibly can. Cool, that's fine. I'm cool with that. But if they come out with this game and it's like every other mobile title that I played, where it's like you can only play for a certain amount of time, or hey, you can play as much as you want for free, but if you want to get things done faster, you have to use the special currency. Oh, by the way, you could buy that special currency with money if you want to, or we'll feed it to you in a slow, gradual drip over time. And Animal Crossing Pocket Camp does this to some small degree. You get these things called leaf tickets, and you can get them from completing various objectives in game, or you could just flat out buy the things for real life cash. I have not bought anything in Animal Crossing, and I refuse to, because I'm not going to spend my money on virtual stuff. That's just not how it works, right? Depending on how they implement this with Diablo Immortal, that's going to weigh really heavily on how much I'm going to like this game or if I'm going to play this game. And
yeah,
that's kind of where I'm sitting with it. It is it depends on what they do with it to market it and to monetize it, because there are certain boundaries and lines that I won't cross, and I think that there are lines that Blizzard won't cross, but I'm not sure. And until they give us that kind of business plan and tell us what that, I'm just kind of holding any reservations until I hear more about it. For right now, it looks beautiful. The story sounds really cool. It's an area of Diablo lore that I would love to see more about. The fact that it's a multiplayer, but it's also like there's a storyline, there's like a plot line to play through and everything, and that I can do so on the go with my iPad or my phone, I'm cool with that.
I don't know. As long as I do agree with you on the microtransaction thing, and I've seen, like, I've said before, I've been playing a lot of Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and that's a game that has serious controversy about its microtransactions. I have not used them. I don't bother.
Which one?
See any reason to. Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Oh, okay.
It has a big deal with micro. You can actually buy XP boosts, and you can just buy gold in the game.
See, that just makes me frowny face. Like, I'm actually frowning on the other side of my microphone here, because I don't think that... I think ideally the thing that works for me in terms of microtransactions, how Overwatch handles it. You can pay for loot boxes, but everything in those loot boxes, it's all cosmetic items. It's nothing that's going to improve your gameplay. And I like it that way, because then it makes it completely optional.
And one of the things I know won't work for me for Diablo Immortal, one of the reasons I know I probably won't play it, is that it's going to be, since it's an MMO, it's going to be an always-on game. Like, whereas it's always online, it's always connected to the internet.
Right.
And I love Diablo 3, but I don't like that it's always on, because there are times I want to play Diablo 3, but I can't because the internet's down, or because the servers are down because they have to do something, or there, you know, there's, this is something I never really wanted from a Diablo game. So that's a problem for me, but overall, it's not a problem that I'm going to worry about too much right now. But in general, I think it looks like a good game. So we'll see what happens. We should, there's still more stuff to talk about. My God, we haven't even gotten to World of Warcraft yet. Let's talk about Warcraft 3 Reforged, because we have to.
Oh my gosh, I didn't expect this. I expected if they were going to give us any kind of a Reforged announcement at BlizzCon that it was going to be Diablo 2.
Yeah, I thought so as well. But I'm not surprised they didn't, because I would still not be surprised if Diablo 2 didn't show up as a Diablo 3 in-game. The way they did the Darkening of Tristram, I would not be surprised if that ends up being the case.
That would be
because
really
cool.
Because
they're still, I'm going to mention up front, they're doing a patch right now in Diablo 3 called patch 2.6.4. It's on the PTR. They have buffed pretty much every set in the game. There's like every class has a set that got buffed, if not several. And the damage buff is like really huge in some cases. Pretty much every class. I feel like this is not the move you make if you don't expect people to still be playing Diablo. You know what I mean? Like, this is a long-term change that's adjusting class balance in a pretty significant way.
I was going to say, it kind of, that does a bunch of stuff to tinkering the balance.
Yeah. And the other thing they did is they made it so you can't switch Paragon points while a Greater Rift is open, because people were actually switching their Paragon build during a Greater Rift. Like, once they were like killing trash, and then they'd go and switch
just
to get
to, like,
better
solo
talents
them
for like, elites.
Better and stuff?
Yeah. Not just to solo them better, to basically min-max your way through the hardest rift possible. And it meant you had to be like, you had to like be switching on the fly while you were playing the game, which is in Blizzard's mind, not tremendously compelling gameplay. You have to like know exactly what you're switching to, and you have to be able to do it really fast while you're, avoiding, instead of going out and finding more demons and killing them, you have to basically sit there and avoid them until you get your talents all switched around. It's kind of annoying. So yeah, they're making that not work anymore, but all of that comes together to me to say that Diablo 3 is going to be around for a while. That they do not expect.
Oh yeah,
it to go,
I don't think that they're
soon.
Closing the doors on it or anything. I don't think they're going to close the doors on it. There are still people out there that are playing Diablo 2, aren't there?
Yeah, but that's why I think you're going to see a Darkening of Tristram type situation for Diablo 3. Diablo 2. I think you're going to see a Diablo 2 in Diablo 3 the way you saw Diablo in Diablo 3. I would not be surprised if that happens. But I wasn't expecting Warcraft 3 Reforged. And I mean, neither of us was there at BlizzCon, unfortunately. But we've had people there. We had people who got to play with it and look at it. It looks astonishing. Like, it looks better than World of Warcraft in some ways. Like, this was not something I saw coming at all. Right now, it's
no,
just...
No, but I tell you what, as soon as it went to the dark screen and then it came up on the banners, like, immediate goosebumps. I'm still getting goosebumps just thinking about it, because I was like, oh, they aren't. Oh my gosh, they are. Like, I recognized it, like, immediately recognized it.
But what means they redid that cinematic with the Infernal that falls while the orc and the human are fighting. And seeing the orc and the human still wearing the gear from the original cinematic, but now much better models, it was just throwing me so hard to see that. I was like, whoa, this is so weird. I've always wondered what this would look like. This is just, yeah. I mean, you know how it plays. It plays like Warcraft 3. If they're going to do that for all the cutscenes, because remember there were all those in-game cutscenes in Warcraft 3 where it's story gets told.
Oh yeah.
So we're going to get all those with the new models and stuff. It's just like, man, that's something. I find myself wondering if they're going to do like, you know, are we going to get Reign of Chaos and the Frozen Throne?
I hope so, because Frozen Throne was like the best.
Are we going to get the Founding of Durotar stuff? I mean, that was actually like that was in Reign of Chaos, but it was kind of not. It was like a bit after. So yeah.
Did you hear that? Apparently, they're bringing in Christy Golden, and I think there's a few other people, but primarily Christy Golden, to kind of marry the old Warcraft 3 lore with present day lore a little more clearly, because there are kind of discrepancies between the two. Or there are points between the two that don't necessarily make sense. So I think what they're trying to do here is kind of flush it out and connect it together in a way that it hasn't been connected before. Did you hear about that?
I didn't hear about it, but it's a good move.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent move. There were some people who were like, no, you have to keep it the way it is. I'm like, broken? No, don't keep it broken. Go ahead, make a few little tweaks to it. If this is reforged, quote unquote, then go ahead and reforge it to the best of your ability. And if that involves tweaking things a little bit to make sure that it reflects current day or like ties into current day events and things a little more clearly, yeah, go for it.
They already did it with Chronicle anyway.
Yeah, they did.
Third volume of Chronicle already did this. All you're doing is making the game match the stuff you just put out in a book.
Yeah.
It's already there. And if you want the original Warcraft 3 experience the way it was, go play that. We got that already. You know? I mean, I think that to me this is also some of the degree like why I don't want WoW Classic to be changed at all, because that's what WoW Classic is for. We have original Warcraft 3. We didn't get rid of it. It never went anywhere. It wasn't like with Classic WoW where it got changed. If you want the Classic experience, you can still have it. So.
I know that the demo is long over and everything, but did you get a chance to dink around on it at all?
Never. I didn't get it.
Oh, okay.
We only got one virtual ticket this year.
Right.
Only my wife did. I watched my wife play it. Like, I sat there right next to her while she was playing it.
How did she do?
Let me put it this way. Within 5 seconds, she was cursing the dead spot.
Yep.
Remember the dead zone from Hunters? I mean,
that's why I didn't play like, a hunter. Yes.
Yeah. It's like old school Westfall is just, you forget how much nothing there was in Westfall, how much just running across fields of grain you did to get from point A to point B. That horrible Frobrow farm where you had to like go out and just kill and kill and kill trying to make soup farts. Just, yeah, it's all there. It's exactly the way it was. It's challenging and annoying, but it's also like, I'm not a nostalgic person, but even I was like, you know, you get that feeling. You know what I mean? Like you see old Westfall the way it was. It's not no big fountain of light shooting out of it. Everything is just the way it was. The boars
Sentinel
are annoying.
Sentinel Hill is just a hill.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, if that's what you guys wanted, then there it is. It is what you guys wanted. Happy you get it, you know?
It was interesting to me to go back and play a druid. Because I had these memories of playing a druid where I remembered it was really painful to level a druid. And I was really lucky because I had a friend who was playing with me and he was playing a warrior. So he would like kill things and I would heal him along the way because that was all I could really effectively do for a really long time. And it frustrated me. Like that class just frustrated me right up until about, I'd say, level 50 or so when I hit Un'Goro Crater. And then I had another friend of mine who was playing a druid who said, no, see, you need to, like, you're not shifting. Why aren't you shifting into different forms? I'm like, because they don't do anything. And they were like, no, see, here's the thing. You can't just play in one form. You have to kind of play in all of them. I said, what do you mean? And then they took me on, like, this crash course school, like, druid school. Hang on a second. Sorry, guys. I'm still getting over, like, a cold cough thing. So, yeah. They took me on this crash course through Un'Goro Crater, and I remember it vividly because it was the very first time that I enjoyed playing that druid. Like, really enjoyed playing the class. Because it wasn't... Druids in vanilla, they always talked to them about them as... They were like, a jack of all trades, but master of none, right? So you could go in and do roguish kind of things in kitty form, but you were never as effective as a rogue. You could go in and you could kind of tank things as a bear, but you were never as effective as a legitimate tank, like aka a warrior, because paladins just didn't do that, right? And you could heal, but your healing was nowhere near as effective as a priest or a paladin. Right? So the kind of philosophy that you had to adopt in those early days playing a druid wasn't, I'm going to master one spec and I'm going to be the best balanced druid ever. It was, what do I have to do in this split second to survive? What do I have to do in this split second to continue to do damage? What do I have to do? And you shifted back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And it was really fast paced and it was really fun. But you don't get all those forms and you don't get all that utility until you are way higher level. So going back into Westfall at level, what was it? Level 10 that we started at? Level 15? Something. I think we were level 15 on the demo. You start out with bear form and a couple of balance spells and it's not great. It's
yeah,
just not
great. My wife was saying that if they had made it level 10, you wouldn't even have a pet.
Yeah.
Hunters didn't even get their first pet to level 10.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's just messed up. Like, yeah, the stuff that we... I remember playing a warrior, like, back in the day, you didn't get charged to level 10. It's like, now they give you level 4. It's like, back then, you didn't get it to level 10.
Right.
So, the first 9 levels, you're just running at everything.
And I can't imagine going back to old school hunter, because old school hunter, you have to, like, tame your pets, and then you have to feed them and keep them happy. You have to, like, carry your ammo around. There's, like... There's just a giant inconvenience factor that I completely forgot about because I've been playing the newer version for so long. Like, we've been playing post-Cataclysm longer than we've been playing pre-Cataclysm at this point, which is really weird to think about.
It has been
but
a
it
while.
But it was still, despite this, and I don't want to come across as like an eternal complainer or anything, despite this, it was still kind of charming to go back to it all. It was kind of fun to go back and like beat my face and go, oh yeah, I can't talk to any NPCs unless I'm out of bear form because they don't talk to animals. And I forgot about that. There were like these little and like you don't get quest markers anymore. You just have to read the quest text and kind of make your best guess as far as where to go to get that. There's no markers on the map that'll tell you where anything is. Nothing glows, nothing glitters. You just have to find it, right?
Yep.
And it took like a good, I don't know, probably like a good 15, 20 minutes or so of running around when all of a sudden something clicked in my head and I went, oh yeah, those guys, they're over there. I remember now. And I started running around and doing quests and going, yeah, okay, I remember where everything is. It took me a hot minute, but I remember where everything is now. It was kind of fun, you know?
Yeah, I think I will probably play it occasionally. I don't think I will like make a big deal out of it, but since it's going to be something I'll have just for my WoW.
Yeah, I'm never going to invest the hours in it that I invested the onset when I had way more free time on my hands.
Getting to 60 was not fast.
Oh, it took forever.
I remember there were stretches of game time, and I played Alliance my first time through. Alliance had more zones, straight up more zones to go to. If you're playing as Alliance, you have more options in vanilla. The Horde had a much more limited, you know, leveling path. That's one of the things Cataclysm fixed. So if we're going back to Classic, as your Horde player, you know, get used to the same zones all the time and get used to, there's a drought right around level 20 to 25. You just run out of stuff to do and you can't, you're like level 20 to 25 and you can't go anywhere.
You remember when the leveling guides were out there and they're like, here's how to level really fast and WoW and da 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 da. And there was always a section, particularly on Horde side, that was like, go to Desolus, kill buzzards for the next 45 minutes.
you should be getting this much. Yeah, because you needed to get to like level 30 real bad.
There weren't any quests in between. Like, there were no quests in between. So they're like, just go find these guys. They'll give you lots of experience when you kill them. And you're going to have to kill probably about 45 to 75 of these things.
Yeah, you seriously were like, you would be hitting like, you were like in Desolus, but you were too low level to get the quests that the Horde had in Desolus.
Yeah.
So you had to kill stuff to get up to the point where you could take those quests. Because you'd finished Stone Talon. You had nothing left to do in Stone Talon. And it's like, well, if you go back, if you try going over to Eastern Kingdoms, all the stuff over there is either lower level than this or way higher level than this. So you got nothing. You can't, you know.
And as much as I complained about playing my Druid, when I was leveling my Druid, I really did like it after I hit that level 50 point and had that Druid crash course and figured out what the class was all about on a more kind of intrinsic level. I really enjoyed the class at that point. But when I hit level 60, I immediately threw up my hands and said, "Okay, I'm done now," and went and rolled Horde. And I made a Forsaken Shadow Priest because that was the most OP thing that anybody had ever seen, and I didn't quite understand what OP was until I started playing that. And I leveled through Horde side pretty dang quick because, yeah, that class race combination, you guys, spec, is almost unstoppable, and you should totally play it in Classic.
Yeah, because they had the racial ability that worked really well with the
Devouring Plague. Yeah,
yeah, and that people didn't realize Devouring Plague was a racial. It wasn't.
Yeah.
A spell everybody had. It was a racial ability that only undead had. So yeah. But at this point, we're looking like we got another 10, 11 minutes and we've got a ton of World of Warcraft stuff to talk about. Yeah, so much. I don't think we'll get through half of it, but we got to try. So we know that in December, I think it's the 11th, right? Did they say exactly when? I think they said December 11th.
I think it's the 11th.
Yeah. Patch 8.1 will be dropping. That's
finally.
We're not going to immediately get the new raid. That's not going to. It doesn't come out the second the new patch comes out. But
I
we
think
will
that
get
comes
the
out
Waffle.
After the new year. Yeah.
Yeah. They said yeah, it's going to be a while.
Yeah.
But the Warfront will be out, and there will be like various changes. They just hot fixed in some changes to Uldir, by the way. So those are already live. But there'll be like the new Warfront, the Night Elf Forsaken one, the Battle for Darkshore will be out. That's, you know, I play Night Elves right now. That's what my character is. So I'm looking forward to that just if no other reason than to see what the gear looks like and to see if it's suitably Night Elfy. Because
I'm looking forward to the story stuff because the story stuff sounds amazing.
Yeah, I want to do the quest. The quests that open up, you don't actually have to do those quests to do the Warfront, but the quests that explain what's going on in the Warfront will be coming and you can play through those. I don't think there's no item level requirement for those that I know of. I'm pretty sure there's an item level requirement for the Warfront, but they haven't announced what it is. I would not be surprised if it's at least three, you know, it should at least be up where, you know, the current Warfront is. I want to say 320, but I don't know if it's actually 320.
I think it's 320 for the current one. If they made it 350 for the Darkshore one, then I'd be okay with it. Any higher than that, though, and then I'm going to really start swearing a lot about my lack of fortune as far as daggers goes, because it's dragging my eye level down like, whoa.
But there, that's happening. We're going to have the new raid will eventually come. We've already seen some stuff from it. One of the things that gets me is, this is something I really feel needs to be pointed out, even though they pointed it out before. Both Alliance and Horde will eventually fight all the same bosses. You will eventually get all the bosses in Battle for Dazar lore, whether or not you're Alliance or Horde. The way that that's going to work is the Alliance starts on, like, you know, they hit Dazar lore, raid through the whole place. The Horde starts about three bosses in, and they're coming to defend those bosses. So the fights from their perspective are different. It's instead of the Alliance, you know, the Alliance are just attacking Dazar Lor, the Horde are coming to save the day because Dazar Lor is under attack. And each side gets to see the other side's three bosses through basically a mercenary mode like thing that flips your, you know, you'll be playing your Alliance character, but they'll be disguised as an orc or a troll
it's
or whatever.
Sort of like going into the Caverns of Time when you get turned into a different race entirely.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of cool.
This one actually switches your racial abilities.
Ooh.
Like you actually get, like, if you turn into an orc, you get their you know, the blood frenzy ability. If you turn into a troll, you get regeneration, stuff like that. So you actually do switch because you're technically, it's not you going to the Caverns of Time. It's you, technically speaking, you're not actually there. You're just hearing about the fight afterwards. So you're playing as the Horde characters that did these fights. And vice versa. The Horde show up, they get to play as the Alliance that are actually raiding Dazar Allor. But everybody does eventually get to fight all the same bosses, just in a different order. And I think that needs to be said, because people are like, oh, I don't care, I'm not even going to get to see Jaina. Yeah, you are. The Alliance players will get to see the Jaina fight. You will get to see what it's like. You will get to hit Heroism and then have Jaina ice block on you, which I find just awesome. I think that's the best.
I think that was like the coolest thing when they announced that, or when they mentioned that. I'm like, oh yeah, no, that's absolutely appropriate, because she's not an idiot. And
oh,
I like
doing
the
that?
Fact. Yeah, well, what I like about this is that, you know, you're going to be fighting these notable NPCs or whatever, but those notable NPCs, they are not stupid just because they're a raid boss. They know you. They know you very well, and they know the Heroes of Azeroth very well. I mean, we've been fighting alongside them for how long now? So it just makes sense for her to do that. And yeah, when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's clever and totally appropriate. So
yeah, and it's, people are already talking about ways that mechanic could be used to your advantage. Like, for instance, you pop ice block to get Jaina to stop attacking you for 20 seconds so your healers can heal you up. Or if you've got a player in the raid who gets, if you get too many players frozen and your DPS drops too low anyway, you might as well get her to ice block so you can turn all your DPS to breaking them out so that they're ready to go when the ice block fades.
It's a tactical thing, yeah.
Yeah, so that's to me, that's interesting. And there's lots of lore to this thing, which we talked about on Lore Watch, so I don't think we need to go too much into detail, but just getting to see the story get to its midpoint, knowing that this isn't even midpoint. Midpoint's like 8.2. How much do we want to talk about 8.2? Like, I mean,
probably not a ton, except that we're aware of what's going on with it, and there's some big stuff coming, and I'm so excited because Ashar is finally, ooh, I'm dropping things. Ashar is going to finally be a thing.
Yeah, Ashar is going to be a thing. I don't know how I feel about that, because I don't want her dead. Like, I really hope that whatever her fight is, she doesn't die in it.
We have been waiting so long for her to show up that if she died in that one single raid battle, it would be doing the character an immense disservice. And I don't know if they're willing to do that. They did that with Fandral. I thought Fandral had all kinds of story potential, and it never got tapped. He just got made into a raid boss, and then he was gone. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, you could have done so much more with that dude. You could have done so much more with him. And Ashara is one of those flagship bad guys where I'm like, I don't even want to see her relegated to the course of like a Deathwing. You know, they brought Deathwing back, and we were really excited about that. But then the storyline was kind of, as far as he was concerned, you know? I don't want to see that either.
I feel like to a certain degree that it would be really bad if Ashara just comes in to be the end boss of a mid-tier raid. Because there's going to be another patch after 8.2, and there's going to be another patch after that. So, yeah, this is an expansion that's going to be around for a bit. But I am still pretty excited to see that. I'm excited to see the other content we're going to get at the same time. Mechagon, yeah. The Robo Gnome homeworld.
Freaky
which we don't know
steampunk
about.
Gnomes, what the heck? Yeah. I can't wait to see what's up with all of that.
So that's coming, and that was announced at BlizzCon. So and of course the new Goblin and Worgen models are coming, which I like them, but I feel like they still need a little work. But they were works in progress when we saw them, so that's not surprising.
I think that all we saw at BlizzCon were stills, and I want to see them in motion because I don't think that we're going to get a really good grasp on what they look like until we see them in motion. So,
and one thing that was pointed out was that the stills didn't show eye glow, but you will be able to choose an eye glow for your Worgen when you do pick what they look like. So there's overall, I still think they're improvements, though. I'm willing to say that they're definitely improved, especially the female Worgen model. I'm hoping they also dial back the sniffling. Like, guys,
please.
Yeah, can Worgen stop going all the time?
It's the worst.
Real fast.
It's so bad.
You know, I loved Worgen when they came out. I only played one for like a week, and I was like, okay, no, I can't do it. I can't keep listening to that noise. Please dial that back. Make that an occasional thing, like once every 20, 30 minutes, maybe. Not the continuously. Do you have cold? What's going on, man? Seriously, blow your nose or something. Oh God. I have a dog in my house. She doesn't do that. She isn't sniffling constantly. But yeah, that's coming. That looks pretty cool. That's like an 8.2.5, I believe they announced for the Worgen and Goblin redesign.
The goblins are just they're a little more, you know, high quality as far as the models go. They didn't look too terrible. It was the Worgen that really needed kind of a brushing off and an update. The goblins they weren't as expressive as, you know, later models were. So they did need the update, kind of, sort of. But the Worgen in particular, they just, I don't know. It's been how many years since Cataclysm came out, and the Worgen never quite looked right.
Yeah. And it's been about 8 years, I guess. Seven, 8 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Wow. Let's not think too much about that. But yeah, there's a ton of stuff coming for WoW. They actually did a lot of announcements. So, you know, I guess we're pretty much not going to get to any emails.
No, it's okay, though, because we can get to emails next week. It's fine. We missed a couple of weeks here, so we kind of had to catch up. And I think we did that. Yep. I don't know.
Well, you know, Pilgrim's Bounty, is that what it's called? I can never remember what Pilgrim's Bounty is called. Pilgrim's Bounty is called that.
Pilgrim's Bounty. It's the one where you go cook a lot of food, and initially it was really, really good for leveling your cooking skill, but since they kind of revamped how cooking skill and everything works now, it's not exactly as interesting a thing to do as maybe it was in years past. However, you can get some pretty good reputation with various factions if you don't have those reputations maxed out already from the various capital cities. I believe doing turn-ins for each of those gives you a pretty good chunk of rep. So if you're still looking to max out your reputations with your, like, you know, your capital cities, if you're on an alt that maybe you boosted and they didn't get those initial reputations or anything like that, this is a good way to go ahead and work on that. And it's remarkably low stress because all you're doing is cooking things and ferreting them from one city to another, which I guess is okay.
We should also mention that the 14th anniversary is currently in progress.
Yes.
So 14. We're still the 30th.
14.
Yeah. 14. Yeah, 14th anniversary. Don't feel old. I dare you.
Did you get the Corgi goggles? Because the Corgi goggles are everything, and I wish they hadn't nerfed them.
Yeah, they are pretty cute. What did they nerf them?
They nerfed it. It was when they came out with them. When it came out with them, it was like, I think it was like a 30-minute duration with a 10-minute cooldown or something like that. And that was a mistake, and they flipped them the other way. So it's a 10-minute duration with a 30-minute cooldown.
Oh, so you can't be permanent corgi. Okay.
So you can't, you can't see everybody as corgis all the time forever, which kind of is sad because, dang, it sure is cute.
I mean, this stuff's only happening during the anniversary anyway, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you want to go kill the various world bosses from years past, like the Green Dragons and Kazak, you can go do that. Azuragos, I believe, so you can get Typhoon some other models.
It's Azuragos and Kazak, and then the Green Dragons of Nightmare are also up. It's not all four of them up all at one time.
No, it's just
rotates.
One of them.
It just rotates on. I think it's like a daily basis. It rotates which one happens to be up on any given day. But if you have the quest in your quest log, you can see which one is up. And if you don't, just like type Dragons of Nightmare into the group finder, and it will tell you which one it is. Because a lot of people are doing groups for those. The Dragons of Nightmare are just as problematic now as they were back in the day.
Yeah, because those mechanics are never going to be easy.
Oh, they're terrible. Yeah. Azuragos is also kind of painful, but not on the same level.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, that kind of wraps us up, I think. So we should probably wrap up the show here, huh? Yeah? You think?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Blizzard Watch. It's made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you very much, Anne. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. If you have an email for the show, because we will start answering those again next time, please send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with podcast or Blizzard Watch in the subject line so we know it's for the show. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll be here next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.